But when the snowy landscape was rubbed out and the blue walls in the tower room enclosed me like a heavenly cape, a thought arrived saying that the beauty of earth also existed where I was dwelling now. I was in the abodes of beauty, in the origin of the sister that is called earth. Then completely different images appeared on the cupped wall. They panted a memory song that felt bittersweet. There were good and beautiful moments from my last life. There were the favorite places of my memory. Were they still there in the valleys of loss? That was what Sharla asked me when she entered the tower room. I don't know how long I had been sitting there, swiveling round and round in the chair, in order not to miss out on anything that was replayed. I had perceived all scents, even freshly brewed coffee and fresh baked bread. I had heard words being whispered and I had seen me and my family, near ones and dear ones, and heard their happy, friendly voices. No dark memories were included, maybe in order to give me the illusion of a constantly joyful life. I had read poems with my friends and colleagues and I had visited the places I loved. The thorns of longing should have torn my heart apart, but I looked calmly at Sharla and answered, "If this was a trick to entice me into incarnating on Earth again, it has failed. I admit that I enjoyed it, that I loved every second of the images, aromas, and conversations with friends. All the time I was thinking how beautiful Earth is and how pure its nature appeared. But you only showed me the beauty. What I saw was a pipe dream, a random selection from different scenes of my life that certainly are true, but yet negligibly small in comparison with all the rest, the negative. No thanks. I refrain from living on Earth again, no matter how beautiful it is. It's not possible to live down there without the negative, and perhaps even the evil, getting caught in the web of life. Here and now is life. Earth is the most difficult trial of them all." Sharla nodded thoughtfully. "As above, so below is what humans say. But they're right only from their own simple aspect. The lasting beauty, love, and goodness are to be found here. The trial enters inside of you and creates either despair, longing, or worry. But it can also be a kind of confirmation, as in your case. You have come out of the ordeal well, dear Jan. The dual flame. After the trials, my teaching continued at the Angels' School. I felt as if I had passed my examination for the first stage, so that I could continue on the middle stage. The last stage was yet only a dream, a longing, a vision. But Zar and Sharla helped one another in order to make me understand. Zar taught and told stories, and Sharla explained and elucidated what was difficult to comprehend. Sometimes I was the only pupil, sometimes we were several. Many times I thought I recognized some of the other pupils, but I never had the chance to ask them. After the classes, we were all given other tasks. Sometimes we got to watch theater or listen to music, sometimes we danced, and we often sang. Occasionally we studied in the big observatory or in one of the technical halls. It was full of variety and very interesting. We have talked about gods that exist in so many different forms in the innumerable religions on Earth, Zar said. Soon we'll travel around in the worlds here, but before that I will explain a little more of these beings and why they are called gods. You have learned about the Dogons, a people in Africa, haven't you, Jan? Many thousand years ago, beings from Sirius landed there in order to repair their spaceship. They stayed for a while with the Dogons and taught the tribe lots of things. They were given the title gods because they dropped down from space and disappeared the same way. To this day on Earth, the Dogons still tell the legend of the gods from Sirius. That's just one example of endless similar stories. Visitors from space, from other planets, galaxies, and universes, were much more common about 5,000 years ago, and that is why legends about them have remained on people's lips, have been embroidered, and have become one with their dreams and wishes. The help that these gods gave their brothers and sisters on Earth was called miracles. To meet people's different wishes and prayers for help, the gods were given different qualities. It was simpler that way. The gods got to represent the humans' own qualities, good and bad. They were split up into, for example, the gods of love, wealth, prosperity, war, health, the sun, and the moon. They have thousands of names. These gods are in the best of health on their respective cosmic home planet. When the messages and the thought forms from the peoples who worship them reach them, they can send back vibrations or energies that are received by the praying ones, and that sometimes can do miracles. Unfortunately, as many bad things as good things can come out of such contacts between humans and gods. I asked about the central sun. Are there several central suns? The answer was yes. Every galaxy has its own central sun, Zar told me, independent of how many other suns and moons that are in orbit around it. A central sun is not what we would call a sun, because it is not physical. You cannot look at it with binoculars. It is, rather, a radiation of collected power, which constitutes the true power source for all the planets and stars of the galaxy. If utilized correctly, this power can generate a tremendous amount of energy, and as such, we use it for different purposes. For instance, propulsion of our crafts, because it contains dynamic kinetic energy. This enormous power source is accommodated on a physical planet or star in the galaxy. In our case, the central sun is located on Sirius. Is there any connection between duals and the central sun? Do they exist there? I asked. No, my friend, you have got hold of the wrong end of the stick, Zar said, smiling. Every human being has a dual of the opposite sex, and these two are united here, either in the ethereal or in the astral world. This union may take its time. On Earth you have, in the most ridiculous way, confused all these concepts, duals, twin souls, twin flames, etc. Every other woman walks around hoping to meet her twin soul. Many prophetesses shamelessly tell their clients about twin souls, who will pop up in their lives. This may lead the client to labeling a partner wrongly as their twin soul. This, in turn, means that both partners may expect too much from each other. It won't be easy for either of them to live up to being the dream prince or the dream princess. Certainly you have a dual. Certainly you will be united with him or her. Certainly you may find a soul partner in your earth life, but that has not the slightest to do with your dual. Certainly you love on this side of the bridge, too, between then and now. But that love is so great, so all-embracing, and so pure, that you only become a small part of it. That's how we love each other here. You cannot compare that to Earth love. I haven't met my dual yet, I said. She remains on Earth, and I am faithfully waiting for her. Is it not really the intention that male and female must be in balance in every human being? For me, the male has always outweighed the female. But I have had my muse, and she was the most important thing of all throughout my Gen life. I sat for hours talking to her, and that's how my books came into existence. Many times I have left the practicalities I have been occupied with and the demands my family or friends have made on me, just to be with her, my inspiration. She was always in my head, and she was probably the worst rival a wife could have, because she was with me in bed and in all intimate moments of my life. She came with me on my morning walk and sat with the family in the evening. I see my muse as an angel, a divine apparition, a ringing cymbal, a singing rejoicing fanfare. But sometimes she was an advocate of sorrow and suffering. She was my mirror, my wantonness, my melancholy, my everything. And I haven't lost her, because death could not part us. She still lives in the loose tissues that my head now consists of. But she is not your dual, my friend, she is your genius, Zar objected. The dual flame is your opposite. Together, you constitute the negative and the positive pole that makes the lamp burn. You are the two faces of love. The one who lives down on Earth only feels earthly love, while the one who stays here carries the all love within himself, herself. Is that difficult to understand? Both feel longing, however, the longing for each other, the feeling of incompleteness. That can only be satisfied in one of the worlds on the other side of the portal. Duals that have reunited here, something that happens constantly, can, if they want, proceed along together. They may choose, but not without a counselor. Proceed? I wondered. Yes, I mean proceed in their development. But they can also travel together. That depends upon their own wishes and our guidance. But I cannot unveil everything that happens here. The soul must have some remaining secrets to find out. You talk so much of free will. Can you please explain it a bit closer? I asked him. The duals can if they want, you say. Do you keep your free will completely when you have passed the border? Free will is supposed to have been given to the inhabitants of Earth as an experiment, a test of how they coped with it. It is said that free will does not exist anywhere else in our galaxy. But now that I have regained my full memory, I remember we had our free will on Zio. Has it followed us? By the way, what is the use of free will when you live in earthly imprisonment? The soul is held captive in the many times unpleasant shell of the body, and free will is often not at all free. The free wills intersect each other like shining, uncompromising swords, from the cradle to the grave. It is no longer a question of having a free will, but now it is about who has the strongest will, and who can gain power over all the poor, weak-willed wretches crawling in the mud of life. Am I right? The children of Earth at least had their chance of free will, Zara objected. How you then utilized it, is each one's own business. Don't look at it from such a negative perspective, January, but there is yet another explanation. After the fall of Lucifer, the Cosmic Council where the Nine Elders are included became worried about what he would be up to next. It had never been a matter of limiting free will anywhere in the galaxy, and that did not happen, either. On certain planets there are rulers who subjugate, and Lucifer was looking for power. Most of all, his dark creations wanted to strike and subdue. Will is set against will in the whole galaxy, in fact, in our whole universe. It's not only a global problem, it's universal. And is there really anyone with their will that is free? It has become a turn of phrase, nothing else. The Great Spirit gave every energy seed an individual soul that would not submit to anything else but the laws of love and truth. How these souls then have conducted their innate gift was up to them. You're also confusing order, that is regulated by law, with free will. There is a cosmic origin, from which we all descend. The origin does not seek to subdue. It guides every single soul through its own inner self. Don't confuse inner and outer will. The inner will is connected to the origin and only acts in accordance with the cosmic order. There are so many false doctrines on Earth, and among them, I consider free will the worst. It is the outer will that it is possible to manipulate. If you reflect properly, you probably realize that on Earth the law of the strong rules, and the strong has also conquered free will. Anyone who revolts against those in power will get nowhere with their free will. They will be dragged through the mud and eventually be slaughtered. The darkness of ignorance rules on your enlightened Earth, and the strong makes brilliant profits from it. Mother Earth has her free will like all other planets, but in order to exercise it you need power, the power of love. Her power is no longer sufficient. It will soon be transformed into wrath. My dear Jan, may I suggest that we walk on further into the worlds? 8. The realms of the astral world. The astral world is an almost inexhaustible subject, both thrilling and filled with great mystery. This time I did not live there, but previously I used to be there often. I well remember visiting the realms of dreams with Sharla and Zar. With great enthusiasm I had portrayed something for them which is among the very best things I know. Swedish Midsummer, with all the beauty that those words imply. Imagine, I used to say, when we raise the maypole at home, the men's puffing and groaning, their smell of sweat mixed with illicitly distilled alcohol, and joyous acclamations blended with exaggerations from the bystanders, before the pole stands the like a young bride in all its sleeve-wreathed beauty. The gaudy colors in the girls' national dresses gleam in competition with the expectation in their eyes. Where is my loved one? Will I meet him on the farmyard in the coolness of the summer night? Accordion and violin send out squeaking, happy tones, sometimes arabesquely pure and melancholic, sometimes cheerful and teasingly fleeting like the swallow on the roof of the barn, the whispering from the hay barn, and above all, the scent of summer, summer, summer. The realms of dreams. My two friends had heard all that so many times that they were sick to death of it. Imagine my surprise when we entered the realms of dreams and were suddenly standing in front of a real, genuinely Swedish midsummer pole, right in the middle of the celebration, with the music, laughing, singing, and cheering. I went totally wild, like the young man I once was on earth, and I flung myself into the dance, put my arms around the first slender waist I saw, and danced round and round in a reckless whirl. My dancing partner had long blonde curls, eyes like bluebells, and a mouth like red clover, where the honey was dripping for the sweet-toothed cavalier. A living, warm, young female body in a summer meadow gave forbidden promises. I took her hand and we danced together out of the circle towards the distant forest. Suddenly we had to stop, because a stream playfully babbled in front of our feet. On a rock in the swirling water a naked, laughing man was sitting, playing a violin. It was Necken, the water sprite. I lost my grip on the girl, and Necken laughed louder and louder and suddenly Sharla was there, embracing me. Zar was supporting me, because my ethereal legs were trembling and would not carry me. You wanted to experience a Swedish midsummer, and that's what we offered you, Zar said, smiling. It might be a good introduction to this realm of chimeras. Just don't lose your foothold here, because there are dark depths into which you can fall. We will be traveling in the land of dreams, where there's a lot to learn. This realm does not just offer what we create ourselves, like we did now, Sharla interjected. We are now in the astral outskirts. The innermost edges brush against the wonderful nature world. We begin here in the outskirts, where dreams and fantasies have their place. We are as light as feathers here, so much creating is done here, but it is never negative. The creating can stop in its development if the one who creates does not want to continue but is satisfied with what has been achieved. The dream world has its defined and very important position in many ancient cultures on Earth, Zar interrupted. It is to be found among the Native Americans and the Aborigines, where it is one of the original sources of knowledge from time immemorial. Do you mean ordinary dreams? I wondered. I never remember what I dream. Neither did I ever really understand the meaning of the Native Americans much written about dreamtime. They are supposed to move into another dimension of thinking or daydreams, which becomes reality experiences for them. Is that right? Dreamtime is a realm of its own here, Zar answered. Perhaps dreamtime sounds a bit wrong in your language, but that's what it is, and it does not necessarily have anything to do with dreams at night. One must go into a special state of raised consciousness. Then you let the soul travel on its own journeys in dreamtime or dreamland. You get to dreamland every night, consciously or unconsciously, I objected. It sounds simple and unreal. Can I not be realistic, even if I'm just a soul? Zar laughed. Do you know that even children feel the difference between dreams and dreams? He asked. Call this part dream knowledge, if you like. It is exactly from those kinds of dreams that knowledge can be extracted. They inspire and amplify not yet finished ideas. This realm comprises a wide cycle of creative dreaming. Would the dream cycle be suitable? I suggested. That's all right, Zar agreed and continued. You can look at a cycle as a circle, and the circle is the sign for the origin. Our cosmic map is a circle, with circles in it that create a spiral if you lift it in the middle. The law of the circle is one of the most important laws in the universe. Everything's beginning is a circular course of events, and because it has neither beginning nor end, the circle is the sacred sign of eternity. It has the same meaning with the Native Americans, I interjected. They were present at an early stage, Zar answered. Now listen, Jan. We will enter the dream cycle, so that you understand how it works. There are superficial and more deep-going layers or levels in this realm, but the deeper layers you shouldn't enter alone, if you don't know what they mean. I mean that you shouldn't release yourself from the feeling of being one with all that is created. For you are not alone or abandoned. You are one with the universe and with love, and nothing evil can befall you in our worlds. You have to think like that as you penetrate into the dream cycle. Mind you, a knowledge awaits you that based upon your own basic feeling, wholeness or separation. Whatever happens, hold on to the wholeness. It was a dizzying journey into the dream cycle. We all three sailed hand in hand, borne aloft on some kind of airwave. I was not afraid. How could I be, when I was already dead and buried? Yet I had never felt more alive than now. This fantastic life with its infinitely faceted richness of everything, absolutely everything, and more than you ever can imagine, this life has no room for fear, terror, fright, and worry are earthly phenomena that do not qualify for a place in these non-physically physical worlds. It is not easy to explain this. I feel entirely physical, except that some earthly unpleasant needs have disappeared. I feel free, happy, and rich in everything. On earth I considered myself to be a poor devil, here I am rich. Mountains, cliffs, what more words are there to describe these fantastic creations that sparklingly, as clear as glass, raised their glittering tops beneath us? There were snow-capped peaks, and occasionally we caught a glimpse of azure blue mountain lakes like sapphires, set in the golden crowns of the mountains. We flew over all this at such high speed that I could only perceive a fraction of it. It was more magnificent than on Earth, more grand. At the same time, I realized that these were landscapes where anything could happen. Everything we saw was wrapped in an inexplicable magic. Here, fantasy met fairy tale, and fairy tale met reality. Words are not enough. Below us, villages, castles, and simple timber cottages were seen flashing by, but I had no time to register any details. At last we descended and landed right in the center of a small village, surrounded by snow-covered mountains. One might think that we had ended up in Tyrol, but the houses looked different. They were in more vivid colors and had beautiful paintings along the sides and gables. Is there a Tyrol here, too? I merrily asked. Will I soon see men in green feather-trimmed hats and leather shorts playing the accordion? I don't think so, Tsar answered unsmilingly. We are going on a boat tour now. We found ourselves adjacent to a little lake at the end of the village. We got into a rowboat that was tied to a jetty. I did not see any humans. The boat immediately started by its own efforts. On the other side of the lake a high mountain rose, and a magnificent waterfall poured down its shimmering cascades into the water below, where giant foaming waves were formed. We steered straight towards the waterfall. It felt unpleasant, so I grasped the sides of the boat tightly. Sharla laughed at me. Do you still have some unnecessary fear left in your body? She asked mockingly. I would not have expected that. You must be wondering why there are no people here. This is a prototype of a landscape that is used in the dream cycle. We are not the ones who populate the landscape or provide it with occurrences, that is what dreams do. Those who dream themselves here may get lost in the mountains, fall into the waterfall, fight in the pub, or let the lovemaking bloom among the rhododendron bushes in the parson's garden. Everybody sees this landscape in a different way, depending on their own capacity for dreaming. I must interrupt you, I cried. I wonder if visions are the same thing as the dream cycle, or a part of it. A vision is an image which comes to an earth human in order to bring her enlightenment or invite her to reflection. A vision isn't derived from the dream cycle, but may in some cases be a part of it. You experience a vision as a kind of image, of longer or shorter effect and closeness. It means that you must pay attention to something or help somebody. The vision comes from your inner self. It is created by the unconscious mind with a conscious goal. The landscapes of the dream cycle, on the other hand, are all prototypes. There are infinite numbers of them, which are then recreated or populated by the dreamer. The dreamer creates his own experiences in the landscape. He can, according to his wish, overlook the whole landscape, or only fragments of it. He directs his part in the dream cycle with or without guidance, both alternatives occur. I sighed. Did I understand any of this? This is unimaginable, Charlo added with a smile. As usual, she read my thoughts. You must have taken part in it and struggled with it. Here is included a fairy tale world, if you like, with dragons, witches, and knights. The princess with the long golden curls sits in her tower waiting, the hare and the wolf walk together, and Little Red Riding Hood is dancing the jitterbug with the three little pigs. If you want a fairy tale, make one up. If you want a lesson on something, ask for it. If you want to take a walk in the forest in peace and quiet and see goblins, fairies, and other elementals flashing by, just do that. You get what you desire. If you want to travel to another country and experience something special, you will be able to. The dream cycle is the land of the great possibilities, a land where anything can happen, and then I mean anything. Sometimes the Native Americans use the dream cycle to see into the future. There is no constancy here, only a chimera, with infinitely beautiful variants that delight eye and mind. Now hurry up, and let's leave. She had hardly finished pronouncing this when we were whirled away in a rose-colored fog. Of course, I thought, the realms of dreams must be enveloped by rose color. But what were we doing here? Dreams did not belong to the existence where I found myself now, did they? On Earth existed both night dreams and daydreams, but what could I possibly learn here? A lot. Answered Zaz's calm thought voice. The realms of dreams are multifaceted. You have come here to learn how dreams are constructed. Remember, Jan, you are at school. The rose-colored fog lifted and we were standing outside an old castle that roughly was similar to the ones you pass when you travel along the shores of the river. There was a bustling throng in the courtyard. There were knights on horses, and standard bearers walking around. There were squires, stamping, and noise. In the middle of it all was a fair. There were probably 100 variegated stalls, with even more variegated goods. Am I in a medieval incarnation? I asked. No, Charla answered, you're right in the middle of somebody's dream. All around this entire realm there are dreams of the most varying kind. They don't last long, look. Just as a tournament was going to start at the far end of the courtyard and I started to run that way to have a better view, all of it disappeared and I discovered that I was running on a wet beach with a stormy sea on one side and high sand dunes on the other. I bent down and picked up a shell. Inside of it was a wonderful pearl. And while the scenery shifted again, the pearl first melted away and so did the shell afterwards. These are ordinary, messy dreams, Charla told me. There are plenty of such dreams, and we call them rainbow dreams. But there are also dreams that feel almost physical, and nightmares. The latter generally depend on the dreamer's experiences in the subconscious mind, and they are controlled by our greatest enemy, fear. There are daydreams, which are fanning in here occasionally, that often are bringing light, because they are mostly based on longing. Never despise any dreams, each one of them has a meaning. Yes, on the assumption that you remember them, I added, and stopped. We had been wandering around at an easy pace, and now we were standing on a road which wound its way as far as the eye could see. On both sides of the road there were desert moors. You have chosen this road, Charla explained, with a mischievous twinkle in her eye. You are wandering towards an unknown goal, and you have no chance to run away, either to the right or to the left. Oh dear! I exclaimed. Do you know if there's a nice pub at the end of the road? A cold beer would go down well. I believe that the realms of dreams soon have had their day for you, Charla said, smiling. The unknown goal is the next realm, but first you have to meet a person who knows more about dreams than I do. His name is Ores. A tall, sturdy man was suddenly standing in front of me. His snow-white hair reached his knees, and his face seemed chiseled from marble. He was dressed in a pastel-colored coat and held a blooming staff in his hand. I'm in charge of the realms of dreams, he said in a friendly voice. Dreams are like naughty children. Some of them you never get in order. Due to the dreamer's total lack of order inwardly, her dreams often create chaos while sleeping.